Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
And it went from zero to you're a pedophile faster than any Tesla ever made.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
All right. Hello, and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. On this week's show, the Trump-Musk feud cools down, Tesla sets a robotaxi launch date, and we talk about a new car that may just be the best all-around EV you can buy today. But first, how's it going, man? I haven't seen you in a couple weeks since I was on vacation. What's going on?
I'm great, Tim. You were missed around here, man. You know, Kevin Williams did an A-plus job filling in for you, but you know, he kept the chair warm. You were missed, and like I was so sad that the Elon Trump feud happened while you were out, because we're going to cover that extensively this episode. But I was like, oh man, Tim Levin would have loved this. He would have loved it so much. But I'm glad you had a nice restful time and didn't think about work. Did you read a lot of news while you were like hanging out in New York and on vacation, or did you tune out?
I tried to tune out. I did end up thinking about work, partially because yes, this Trump Musk stuff broke, and like it was all anybody wanted to talk about. So yeah, I did read about that. And also I was trying not to think about EVs, because it's kind of like my whole life normally at work. And then I'm walking around New York City, and it's like every 10th car is a damn Fisker Ocean
being
an Uber
now.
And like, I mean, it was really cool, but it was also like, man, I'm thinking about EV startups too much.
Yeah, for those who don't know, when Fisker went bankrupt, basically the remaining fleet and like a warehouse of parts was acquired by a taxi company in New York City. Because New York City's regulations say that by X date, I can't remember off the top of my head, but they want all the cars that do like rideshare and taxi and Uber driving to be zero emission. So like this cab company preempted this by just buying all the Fiskers for like pennies on the dollar. And so now it's not like RAV4 levels of ubiquitousness, but you see a lot of Fisker Oceans in New York City. And it's like, if you know what those are and like you didn't expect it, it's like the most disconcerting thing. And I think your average New Yorker that doesn't really think at all about cars besides like, when is my Uber arriving? Like, does not know or care what this thing is. But it's got such a wild second life, this vehicle, that nobody ever could have expected.
Yeah, it's like the epicenter, the random epicenter of Fisker Oceans, of like orphaned Fisker Oceans, is just like Midtown New York City. It's really, it led to a lot of me like pointing and being like, oh my God, look at that. And my friends being like, what, like literally, what are you talking about? And then having to explain the whole thing.
Yeah. When I'd see them at first, I would literally like pump my fist, but I kept doing that. And the cabbies would just like honk at me and give me the finger because it's New York and that's how people operate there. But anyway, Tim, let's get to the main event. We got a lot to talk about this week. So while you were out and right after we wrapped up recording last week's episode, the Elon Musk-Donald Trump feud broke into public view. And I was really, really sad about that. Like, I was really disappointed that this happened after we recorded last week's podcast. Like, I'm so bummed. I probably would have made margaritas like during that whole thing. I thought about today. I just forgot to get the blender out. Kev Williams would have had a blast with it too, but you know, however, what's really super great and something I'm personally thankful for is that this story is not over, and it took some twists and turns even today as we record, right, Tim?
Yeah. So in case you missed it, which seems impossible, Musk said he was mad about how much deficit spending was included in Republicans' big, beautiful bill. He called this a mountain of disgusting pork, a very evocative imagery.
All caps, disgusting pork.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why that just like was seared into my brain. Like I can't stop thinking about mountain of disgusting pork. So he's right about that. By various estimates, the tax bill would add $3 trillion to the national debt. So it's kind of understandable that the guy who was all about DOGE and, you know, cutting spending from the government was rather pissed about that. He lashed out on X, calling for Trump's impeachment and also claiming that Trump is named in the Epstein files, although he later deleted that tweet.
Yeah, it must be noted that this started as a dispute between the president and his top campaign financier and one of his top advisors. Just totally like about the bill itself and the legislation and is going to be good or bad. And it went from zero to you're a pedophile faster than any Tesla ever made. Like the escalation was just like insane here. And I think from everything I've read about this subject, and I've read and heard a lot, I think even the Trump White House had whiplash when that happened, which is, you know, kind of saying something.
Yeah, Musk does not typically delete tweets, so that's notable. He also is not the first time that he has called somebody a pedophile publicly. If you remember the rescuer of the Thai soccer team stuck in a cave, he called him a pedo guy.
It's like his move. It's like his one move. He's mad at you. He accuses you of like literally abusing children. Like, okay, man, you know. I feel like there's like a chart of escalation we could work up to that, but he just
pulls out like the nuclear option
every time.
I the first thing I thought of when I saw that Musk deleted that tweet was that he was probably afraid Trump was gonna sue him, which is what happened the last time he tweeted and called somebody a pedophile. In the wake of that whole beef, Trump said that their relationship was over. He threatened to cut Musk's government contracts and also reportedly wanted to sell the red Tesla Model S that he bought as a show of support for the struggling company after that weird marketing event on the White House lawn.
What a saga. It's so wild. Like, we had kind of an office pool going at one point at Inside EVs. Like, when was the Musk-Trump relationship going to deteriorate? You know, when the president was elected in November, Tesla's shares went through the roof. They hit their highest valuation they had ever had because investors were banking on the idea that, this CEO of this car and tech and AI and robotics company having such a close relationship with the president, that this would clear the way for a lot of stuff that Musk wants to do with Tesla, clear out a lot of regulations, especially around autonomous cars. So it was seen for a long time as a very favorable partnership. But, not even being partisan here, just like objectively, when you look at like the histories of both men, like these are very like, extremely type A personalities. They're both used to being the boss. They're both extremely hard charging, even mercurial figures. And it's like, I kind of always thought like the town ain't big enough for the both of them. Like maybe the universe isn't. Like this would always kind of go one way. In my mind, it was like a question of like when and not if. And I lasted longer than I thought. But it's wild how much it soured over between him like publicly leaving his post at Doge to go back to his car company, which his investors say they wanted, and leaving like publicly amicably, like having this nice send off in the White House. And then we get into a war of words on social media, and then he's calling the president a pedophile. But the latest news is that as of Wednesday, things seem to be cooling off, at least in public. Musk tweeted, "I regret some of my posts about President at Real Donald Trump last week. I went too far." And I've covered this guy for a decade and a half. I'm not sure how many times I've heard of him apologize about something or even come close to that. So I think Elon realized that he screwed up here. And he did. He did screw up, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I also was like, have I ever heard Elon apologize about anything? And then I was like, wait a second. He didn't say he's sorry. He just said he regrets some of the posts.
He regrets this, yeah.
So not exactly an apology. But yeah, so the mark, like you said, the market seems to value this relationship a lot. Tesla stock basically doubled in the couple of months following the election, like you said, on the promise that this would be good for Tesla's business. And then on the day that Trump and Musk were fighting, Tesla registered its largest one-day market cap drop ever, shedding around $150 billion in value, or get this, three GMs.
Lord, insane. So
that it's come back up since then, since they've kind of mended things. But I think the big question, my question to you, Patrick, is like, does this actually matter? Does this matter as much as Wall Street thinks it does? Does this matter? You know, I think not necessarily for the politics of it, but like for our world, for EVs and for Tesla, does this relationship matter? Or is this just like a fun, like pop story that we like to, you know, that's like fun to read?
It's a little bit of all that. And I've been thinking about this since I was actually shocked at the degree to which this made like wall-to-wall news coverage for several days. And I think that there was like a degree of schadenfreude, especially among like the center-leaning or the liberal-leaning press. And also there were a lot of people on the right, on the conservative side, who came out were like, we actually never liked this guy. He's weird and screw electric cars. And, you know, it's good that he's gone. Like, you actually heard that from several places, that it was like he was a means to an end. So I think that's why it made, when you have like the richest man in the world feuding with the president of the United States when they used to have a close allyship, like obviously that's a news story. I get why it was covered as much as it was, but does it matter, right? I don't know. I think first and foremost, I want to say that like I think this is Elon's fault. I really do. Even people who voted for Trump like know that he's tough and he's no bullshit and that he's pretty vindictive. I mean, like that's often why people vote for him. I'm not offending anyone when I say that, but I mean, like we know it's true. Like you don't vote for Trump because like you think he's a wimp and you love wimps. Like very much the opposite. And like this was a needless fight for Elon to pick for no good reason at all. He could have like left the White House, left Doge, had his opinions about the bill or maybe said some stuff in public, like, you know, I don't like all the spending here, and just like left it at that. But it so exploded in his face for like to give him no tactical advantage, no reason at all. And I think it kind of flies in the face of this myth that he's this, you know, strategic genius who's playing five-dimensional chess even when he's asleep. Like, this was just a dumb, unforced error. Nothing is to be gained here. And he may be the richest man in the world, but, like, Trump can still find ways to turn his lights off, you know? Congress is mulling doing things like closing the loophole that allows Tesla to collect regulatory credits, for example, which is a big source of their income, meaning, like, when other automakers don't make enough electric vehicles, they could pay a fine or they could buy those credits from Tesla. And Tesla pulls in like billions of dollars for this every year, and they have for a long time. The Trump administration could screw with their robotaxi deployment. They could screw with SpaceX's contracts or Starlink's contracts. I mean, it's the federal government. Like, they, if they want to like wreck you, like they can. Or the IRS audits the guy or something like that. So there's a lot of bad stuff that could have happened here. Or, As we call around the office, and I quote, the funniest possible outcome, which is where Trump lets in Chinese EVs as part of some trade deal with Xi Jinping, and it's just to screw with Elon Musk. Like, hey guy, you know, okay, you call me, you saying I'm on the Epstein plane? Like, good luck dealing with BYD and Xiaomi in America now. Like, you think you needed ketamine before, but you're really gonna need it for the waking nightmare you're about to endure. Like, that, I don't think that's gonna happen, but like, there are so many ways that this could have gone south for Musk. And the last I say is just like, I really think that this experience proves how Elon gained very little by moving into politics. That is totally blown up in his face. He's lost the liberals and the Tesla owners, you know, the sort of traditional EV buyer base. Like, they're pretty done with him. They're pissed about the Doge stuff. Now he's public enemy number one on Fox News. And conservatives never really stepped up to, like, buy his Teslas in force. Like, they're not really into it. And what does he have left now? Like, what allies does he have left now that he has alienated, like, so much of the left and the right in America and the White House, too, on top of it?
Yeah, no, totally. I think we were already talking about this as a big unforced error on Elon's part. Just the fact that he was alienating all these people who, like, already own or would buy Teslas. And it seems like it's only going to be worse now. You know, assuming that the kind of Trump Musk beef ends up in some kind of neutral territory where, like, let's say Musk doesn't really get anything more out of Trump or out of the administration that's good, you know, Trump doesn't necessarily go after him. Like, what did Elon get out of electing Trump, right? He helped elect a president who is instituting massive tariffs whenever he's like bored. Tariffs on steel and aluminum and car parts, things that are hurting Tesla and all other automakers.
Yeah.
He wants to eliminate the tax credits, the EV tax credits that are a big driver of Tesla sales. He's ripping away funding for EV chargers. He's ripping away credits for...
Which went to Tesla, by the way, which, like, Tesla Supercharger
right.
Network collected a lot of NEVI money, like a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like you mentioned, rolling back the fuel economy rules that allow Tesla to sell these very lucrative regulatory credits to other car companies, like hundreds of millions of dollars. And all of that at the same time that he's alienated the main customer base for Tesla. So like, and that was all while Musk was on Trump's good side. That's what happened to Tesla.
Oh my God.
So like,
yeah.
So what happens now if Musk becomes an enemy of the state? Like, who knows? You know, he could mess with Trump could mess with Musk and mess with Tesla, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it's a shame. It's like there is the Schadenfreude element for Musk, but it's like it is not a good thing if America's electric vehicle leader and this company that is an incredible technological force in the world, it's not a good thing if that gets kneecapped. It's not good for like this country's leadership in the battery and the EV and the tech space. And it's not good for people that work there. It's not good for the climate. Like this is, people can point and laugh, but like, I don't think there's like winners here, you know? And it's if anything happens to Musk, it's out of pure vindictiveness, I guess. It's kind of a shame all around that this has come to this. But I think this is why you see so many other companies trying to stay out of politics, or certainly out of politics at the like level that Elon got himself into. And now what he's got himself into is a mess he's got to dig out of, you know?
Right. Yeah, and this feud, I think, probably couldn't come at a worse moment for Tesla or a more precarious moment for Tesla. Its sales of cars are falling, and it's about to embark on its most critical and difficult mission yet, which is launching a robotaxi service in Austin.
Yeah, hard to overstate how important this is for Tesla. You know, for years, Elon has said, you know, solving the question of autonomous driving is going to be the difference between Tesla being worth trillions of dollars or being essentially worthless. You know, that's why he's done so much to pivot it from being a car company to what he calls a company that's centered around AI and robots. Like, they have been promising this since the previous decade, and it's basically go time now. I mean, this is not going to be some full-blown like cyber cab, you know, launch all over multiple cities. It's a very tepid start. 10 to 12 cars in like a certain part of Austin to start with. And then after that, he says next year, there'll be millions of them on the road. There'll be millions of them on the road, Tim. But this is it, man. This is the dream. This is the thing that he's been promising for years, and it's gotta work now.
Yeah, right. Tesla has like a $1 trillion market cap right now. And that is almost entirely based on the promise of autonomy, the promise of selling self-driving cars, of having a self-driving car service. Apart from that, its pipeline of products is murky at best. We don't really know what else is coming, although there is some stuff supposedly in the works. But now it's actually happening, and there's no more hiding from, you know, what Musk would normally say on these earnings calls or in presentations is like, next year for sure, we're going to have self-driving, or this year. Or in 2 years. Now he actually has a launch date, and it is June 22nd. That's when driverless Teslas are going to be ferrying people around for the very first time in Austin.
But.
But Musk said that date is subject to change. Yeah. Because they're, quote, being super paranoid about safety, which is a good thing, obviously. It's good to care about safety. But he's also
one
definitely
hopes.
Kind of tempering expectations and kind of leaving the door open for like, okay, I'm saying June 22nd, but like maybe it'll be July, or you know, so we'll have to see like when this actually happens.
Here like it's go time, it's make or break, and it's like actually like make or break might be like July or August or June 22nd of next year or something.
Yeah,
like
or
that.
Next
like,
year. I didn't say which June 22nd.
Didn't say which year. Yeah.
He said this all in a reply to some random person on X, which is a totally normal way to announce company news. You would think that he would, for the date of the robotaxi launch, he would just like, I don't know, tweet that from the main Tesla account. That was like very perplexing to me. I saw the news that it was going to be June 22nd. I was trying to find the tweet and I like couldn't find it because it was a reply to some guy.
Yeah, but that's how he operates now. It's like when he tweets something, he's like, I am making news by speaking. And like, this is where Tesla's lack of communication, not just with the media, because they don't talk to reporters like us at all anymore, but with the public, is really a negative thing. We know that these cars have human teleoperators that can supposedly like remotely take control of these vehicles, because they're not going to have a human driver in them, and I guess drive them to safety or act in some way if something goes wrong, kind of like a drone pilot in the military. But so far, like, Tesla's not being transparent at all about how this system works. Wired had a great story about this week. Like, they reach out to the city of Austin and Travis County and a bunch of other emergency officials down there. Like, what's the deal? How does this work? They direct it to Tesla, who doesn't talk to the press. So nobody has any idea how this remote operation system is actually going to work. And I think that if they're putting this stuff on public roads, they're potentially putting the public at risk with this system. Like, I think that they do owe it to people to be transparent about how it operates. I mean, like, you know, Waymo talks to the press. Waymo has spokespeople there. They're pretty open about this stuff. I mean, it's like they're like open sourcing their technology, but like Tesla operates in a black box at all times, more so than any company I've ever covered, and maybe more so than any other company on Earth, frankly. And this is one of those times where like that approach is not what you need, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. We joke about it, but it is genuinely can genuinely be a problem when you have a company as important as Tesla doing something as dangerous, as potentially dangerous and consequential as deploying self-driving cars. And this is a company whose like public communications amounts to like emojis tweeted out by the Twitter account, or like Elon Musk just like saying things whenever he feels like it. Waymo, by comparison, puts out like peer-reviewed studies about the safety of their stuff. So hopefully it would be beneficial if Tesla did some of that.
They're really meticulous about this stuff, and they log like the miles with the state of California, and I think other agencies too. Like, they're really careful about this stuff, and that's not the approach that Tesla takes to things.
Right. And Tesla does release some safety statistics about its systems, which is what I'm sure the Tesla fans are thinking right now when they're listening to this. But that stuff is just, it's not peer reviewed. It's just what the company says. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. One thing we do know is that Tesla is already testing some driverless cars in Austin. This week, there was a video of a driverless Tesla Model Y that popped up for the first time on social media, where we actually saw a Tesla driving around with nobody in it. We don't know that this really means much for Tesla's ability to like deploy this service in like large numbers, but for a company that's been talking about doing this for so long, it is a milestone. And I think one other pretty critical thing that we learned from Musk's Twitter feed this week is that that Model Y and the Model Ys that have been testing are standard from the factory vehicles. That's what he says. So they're not, you know, one of the big questions is like, okay, Tesla's planning this robotaxi pilot. Are they going to like sneak a LiDAR sensor into there, or like add things to these cars that you can't actually buy? Seems like no. And that's a big deal, because, you know, the promise for the last 10 years or whatever has been, if you buy a Tesla, that car will drive itself, not necessarily just the like robotaxi service. And so they're, you know, kind of, they're trying to make good on that promise at least.
Yeah. As a very quick aside, the driverless Model Y that we saw was driving down South Congress Avenue in Austin, which is one of the probably the most iconic streets in Austin. It's where like Guero's and Home Slice Pizza and a bunch of other places are that are really famous there. And fun fact, like a few blocks up the road from there, like last Christmas, I got into kind of a standoff with a Waymo car on one of the side streets that was technically two lanes, but narrow enough that only one car could go at a time. So it's coming up like this, and I'm coming up like this. I'm like, what do I do? Like, do I like wave at it? Do I back up? Like, what? I would tell a human driver, I could signal to it, and it just kind of kept encroaching. It's like, okay, fine, Waymo. So like, that's a pretty like pedestrian and bike and car heavy area that we're now, that Waymo's operated, and now we're adding in Tesla robotaxis that work in a completely different way. So this is going to be fun to see. And I just, as a former resident, like, I don't really envy Austin for having to deal with the beta testing this whole thing. But I think this is a good way to segue into like how this stuff works and what the table stakes are. Tesla's cars do not use LiDAR, you know, light-based radar or other sensors. They use cameras and AI. That's it. And that's Elon's argument, is that it works like a human. Like, you drive a car using your vision and your cognitive abilities. But there are many experts in the autonomous vehicle space who say that's not enough, that you need advanced sensors and LiDAR, and it needs to be much better than a human driver is for this to work. And my experience with the Waymo cars is like, they're getting closer to that. Like, they're not perfect. Certainly they run into issues, but like, dude, you're in them. Like, they have this level of 360 degree awareness that I think now exceeds what a person can do. So, you know, Musk isn't just betting on like this as a robotaxi service. It's like the technological thesis of the company that is being put at stake here.
Yeah, totally. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that Musk said robotaxi is coming June 22nd. That's not the only autonomous sort of deal that Tesla is planning. He said that on June 28th will be the first time that a Tesla will drive itself from the end of the line at a factory to a customer's house, which is pretty remarkable. I guess, do you think that makes sense? And do you think they can do that? Like, what's your thoughts there?
I'm just glad he's not doing this on like a game day weekend, honestly, because like that's another level of chaos in Austin, Texas. So smart of them to do it in June. I think we're talking about remote deliveries. Like, it is technically feasible to do this. Like, the last time I really got to use full self-driving like at length was when we did the Breakthrough Awards testing late last summer, and I did it in a Cybertruck, and it was the best FSD experience I've ever had. It has gotten better and safer and smarter. It still whacked a curb with the Cybertruck's wheel because the thing is like gigantic, but like it is getting smarter, but it's kind of a question of distance. Like, how far is this car going from the factory to your house going? Like, if you live in like my old house in South Austin, that's, a 20-minute drive if traffic's good, which it never is. But like, it's not that bad. But if it's going to like, you know, Houston or Dallas or New York City, like how is that going to work effectively and safely? Right.
Yeah. Like, I'm kind of like, I'll believe it when I see it. Like, that sounds cool. They are already, the Teslas are already driving themselves like from the end of the line in the factory to like parking areas, which is interesting. And maybe that, you know, saves them some human labor or something. But yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. I was like plotting the miles from, you know, whatever, Austin, from the Tesla factory in Austin to New York or to Detroit or something. And it's like, yeah, so what, you want to get a car that has like 1500 miles already on it, like just driving autonomously.
Do I get a discount if that's the case? Yeah. Is it like cheaper when I get the delivery discount?
So I wonder, I would imagine they'll just do it to like, you know, within 10 miles of the factory, within 30 miles, just for, you know, consistency in the environment. And also like, who's going to charge it? Like, you know, it can't go more than 300 miles, I guess. Right. Like, they would need to have somebody plug it in. I don't know. Somebody's going to ride the passenger seat and plug it in.
Or just like, it like blinks its lights until some kind citizen at a supercharger station says, please plug me in, you know? Fun fact also, Tesla's not the only ones experimenting with what you just said, which is like drive, like self-driving through the factory. Like, even Toyota is starting to do that with its cars. And that's a really good use case for autonomy. Like, you're on a closed loop course. You know what you're going to do every time you program it in. You kind of do cut down on human labor or other moving part costs, like just have the car drive through the factory. So they're just going to allegedly take this idea to a much more extreme level, which is it drives through the factory, then out of the factory, then to your house in Northern California, Tim. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then who do you complain to when your car is like dirty and has panel gaps? Do you yell at the computer? I don't know.
See, again, this is why I wish this company, like, I would love to call an engineer, somebody over, like, hey, sit down and let's do an interview. This actually sounds cool but crazy. Why don't you explain it to us? And that's not how Tesla works. It's like, no, instead we wait for the boss to send tweets about it, if he ever does.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, side note, like, if anybody here is listening and knows somebody at Tesla who can invite us to the robotaxi pilot, please do. We want to ride in it, and we will be fair.
I'm genuinely curious. I want to see it. Like, as soon as this is up and running, we're going to wrangle some Inside EVs folks to go down there to Austin and check it out. I'll bring you, Tim. We'll get some breakfast tacos. It'd be great.
Sounds good. And your famous avocado margarita or something. The most disgusting sounding drink on the planet.
Oh, it sounds bad. But when you try it, you'll be won over, I promise. we'll get you some real barbecue, not that Yankee crap that they pass off as barbecue in New York City.
It's embarrassing.
Okay, I'm moving us on. moving along.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home.
When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
So, yeah. So a couple of weeks back, we talked about how you drove the Volvo EX30, which was a car that you were super excited about. You almost bought it, and then you wound up pretty disappointed in it because of the price and because of the way it is when you got behind the wheel. Yeah. Now you're driving the Hyundai Ioniq 9. That you are really enjoying, right?
Yeah, I picked this thing up last night, and I have to front load this by saying, like, I apologize to everyone. Like, I've become that guy that everyone hates, that like just has driven too many EVs and is electric pilled and like can't stand gas cars anymore. And I still own a gas car. I have an EV and a gas car, but like I had to fill in for a Motor One staffer on our sister site to do a video shoot, and I was in the new Honda Passport Trail Sport, a vehicle I learned existed 24 hours before this video shoot, which is just like this like big kind of off-road-ish crossover with like a V6 engine. And I'm in this, I'm like, why the hell would somebody spend $60,000 on this thing? It is so loud. It's so slow. It's sluggish. I'm just like, this is 20th century technology. And so I'm that guy. And I hate that guy. Everybody hates that guy. I remember covering Tesla in the 2010s, and like all the Tesla guys would just go on and on about the performance of their cars. Like, yeah, shut up. Like, no one cares. But now that's me. So apologies in advance. But I traded that Honda in, got the Hyundai Ioniq 9. And I think it's excellent, man. It's like I think it's maybe the best all-around EV you can buy in America right now.
Wow. Tell us why.
So this is their new car, three-row SUV, all electric. This is made in the United States, which I think is really cool. It's at the Georgia Meta plant, where you and I both have been. It comes from the factory with a Tesla plug. So with the adapters that are included, you can kind of charge it on anything, a Tesla supercharger station or like a CCS plug somewhere. So it'll do anything. 10% to 80% in 24 minutes. Well over 300 miles of range. And I picked it up last night. I saw it at 343 miles of range at 90%. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, 300 miles of range also in every trim, which is awesome. Like, yeah. Normally it's like, the entry-level one's like 2-something, and then you have to like pay more for the big battery. Not in this car.
Yeah, and it looks awesome. It's super spacious. It was very quick and very, very smooth driving. And above all, like, I thought the build quality was exceptional. Like, me and Kevin talked about this on a couple of podcasts, but when we were in China, well, the EVs we drove really felt like they were like third, fourth generation products. Like, the people who make them really have them dialed in and know how to build them. And I think a lot of EVs in America still feel like they're startup efforts. Like, honestly, like the GM cars feel like that. My Kia even feels like that a bit. I think Rivian's still in that stage. I think Tesla kind of never got out of that stage. This thing felt like it was from a company. It's like, yeah, we've been building EVs for a while. We know what the hell we're doing, and the car's going to feel like that. Like, it is the first time in the United States I've ever felt that way. And it was like, man, this is really cool, this thing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. When I was driving it I drove it at the press launch recently in Georgia, where I also got to see the factory, which was super cool. I saw more Ioniq 9s than like I'll probably see in my entire life there. But I was driving it around and I was like, is this like a budget Lucid Gravity? And I think in a lot of ways it is. Like the Gravity was the most impressive EV I've ever driven. Like,
yeah,
like, hands down. It's huge and spacious and drives like a sports car and has super long range and super fast charging. Like there's nothing it does badly. And the Ioniq 9 is also this like super long range, fast charging, really big inside van, like minivan type EV, but it costs like $60,000 instead of like $95,000 or $100,000 like the Gravity does. So it's a really good EV. And I think if you need all that space, if you need three rows and a big vehicle, the Ioniq 9 is probably the best EV you can find.
Yeah. And it's definitely not something I would buy. Like, I do not need a vehicle like that big. Like, that, this is for like families with like multiple kids, ideally. But I just think the total package was really insane. You know, it's still expensive though. Not as much as the Gravity, obviously, but it's not cheap, right? I mean, you have some data on that, right?
Yeah, I think that was kind of, I mean, it feels like, I'm like tired of saying this because like almost every time we drive a new EV, we're like, this thing's pretty good or this thing's great. The only problem is that it costs like $20,000 more than the equivalent gas car. And like, yeah, that needs to change. That needs to change. And that's the same deal with the Ioniq 9. Like, it starts at around $60,000, which is thousands of dollars more than a fully loaded Palisade, which is the gas equivalent Hyundai SUV. So like, who's going to buy it? It's going to be somebody who's like very serious about EVs and like has done all the math about like how much money they're going to save on charging and stuff. I don't know. I just think it's a little bit of a hard sell, especially at like the one that I drove was pushing like $80,000.
Yeah.
And you could buy a lot of cars for that much money. Even the base one costs the same as the Genesis, you know, the like fancy version of the Hyundai. The Genesis GV80 costs the same as the Ioniq 9. So like, I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to wince at a $75,000 price for a Hyundai, even though this brand has like gotten a lot better and like raised its profile in recent years. People are going to be like, oof, $75,000 for a Hyundai? Like, let me go buy like, you know, an Audi or something.
I know. Yeah. And it's like, I'm very effusive of this thing so far, but it's also the one I'm testing is $74,300. So yeah, a little out of my price range, but in some degree of its favor, its cousin is the Kia EV9, which is, you know, a very closely related, three row EV from the same company. They're actually, they feel very different. They drive very differently. Ioniq 9 is a different, bigger battery and more range. Like they do feel like different cars. But like for the EV9, like we've seen some like crazy discounts on those. Like going for $50,000-ish down from 60, 70. So if you're interested in this thing, like watch out for the deals out there but I do think if you're getting this, you're getting like a hell of a lot of car. And it's so far like the only three row SUV that I like look forward to driving.
Yeah, for sure. And since it's made in America, it does qualify for the $7,500 EV tax credit as long as it may exist. So keep an eye out for that as well.
No, that's a really good point here. So that's a nice discount on you're paying that much for that EV. Like you take what you can get. So I'm excited to test it more. All right, now it's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world this week. Tim, who you got for me?
I have a minus, and I feel like I feel like I'm always bringing minus. Next time I'm going to come with something positive, but my minus this week is this recent proposal from Ohio Senator and former car dealer, Bernie Moreno. He released a plan to be included in the Senate's reconciliation package, and it includes a $500 annual tax on EVs.
Good
and
Lord.
A $250 annual tax on hybrids. And if that rings a bell, it's because the House version of this bill, the big beautiful bill, already includes a $100 tax on hybrids and a $250 tax on EVs annually. The idea is to, like, you know, bridge the gap because EV owners are not paying the gas tax and paying into, like, road improvements. Various studies on this have shown that, like, that's an insane amount to charge somebody for driving an EV. Like, most people are not paying that much. Most people are not paying nearly that much in their gas taxes.
Yeah.
So this is kind of just like taking a dump on EVs and on hybrids just because it's, like, popular now in the Republican Party, I think. And $500 annually for an EV or $250 for a hybrid is just insane. Like, I don't know. That's so much money to charge somebody just for choosing, for the party that keeps talking about, like, giving Americans choice again. It's like, really? You're going to charge people $500 just for buying an EV? It's crazy.
I did the math, and that is, at the fill-up schedule we have for our gas Mazda 3, that's about 8 months worth. Because I usually gas it up twice a month-ish, okay? So, like, good Lord, that's a lot of money. Like, $250, like, you know, like, that's pretty annoying, but okay, fine, whatever. Like, you know, if that's a fair deal for, you know, contributing to the highway fund or whatever, that's like, okay, whatever, fine. Like, the hybrid one, I think, is even more annoying because, like, so many people own hybrids now, and so much of the auto industry is going towards hybrids because, like, that's what Americans say they want. Like, there are study after study after study, that's where the interest is. Can't go full EV yet, but I would get a hybrid. And, like, you know, Moreno's a dealer guy, and he's heavily subsidized by oil and gas and just interests. And, you know, it behooves him to want people to, you know, be using as much gas as they can. I think what's insane also is, like, it's a $500 at once annual tax. So, like, that's like another, like, an extra car payment then some for people, which is really just an insult. You know, I hope that gets axed and along the lines here. So it's, you know, not great.
Yeah, not super not great. It's one quote stood out to me that he had in this, like, press release about it. He said, "Owning a car has always been a cornerstone of the American dream. And right now, the Republican Party has a once-in-a-generation opportunity to make that dream affordable for the average American again." And I read that and I was like, what exactly is affordable about charging people more money for buying a car? Oh, yeah. And the other thing I was going to say is, you mentioned he's a dealer guy. Wouldn't you think dealers would not want this? Like, dealers are already, like, they don't love selling EVs. Hybrids, they probably do like selling because people want those. More people want hybrids than EVs. But, like, it seems like it would just hurt car sales for car dealers to be like, this car now costs more.
Let's just remember the one thing we just, like, Like thumbing your nose at EV owners, like, I get the partisan football spiking there, whatever, but, like, let's remember the thing we talked about, like, a couple episodes ago, which is that soon every Toyota RAV4 sold new in America will be a hybrid car. And that's the top selling, like, non-Ford F-150 vehicle in America. So, like, all of those people, and Toyota sells a lot of RAV4s, if this passes, they got to pay $250 a year annually. You think those people are going to be cool with that? They think they're going to be really happy about that? Like, wait till the RAV4 lobby shows up. Like, they're legion, and they've got, you know, they've got kids to get to soccer practice, and they're not
soccer moms.
Around. They're pissed. Oh, yeah. You want to mess with, I'm being dead serious. Like, you want to mess with those people? Like, sure. Okay, bro. Okay, Senator, you know. I think I'll end us on a positive note this week, Tim.
Very good.
Other Tim, Tim Stevens, had a excellent review of the BMW iX3 prototype. He tested that at BMW's test track in Miramar, France recently. Is the fun fact that, like, about a century ago they ran Grand Prix there at this track. But so my plus of the week is for BMW, because even in prototype form, other Tim, who is also, like you, an extremely seasoned journalist and tech expert, gave this thing really high marks. And the review of that is on InsideEVs.com. And he says that, you know, this thing is really promising. And I'm looking up his charging data here. Yeah. Officially rated for a max charging rate of 400 kilowatts, which is very fast. And BMW says it can add 200 miles of range in 10 minutes on a 400 kilowatt charger. And he tried it, and he actually saw it do a little faster than that. So, like, BMW is coming out of the gate soon, like, with what will be one of the fastest charging EVs, like, in the American market. And you know it's going to perform well because, like, it's a BMW and all their other EVs have actually been really, really badass so far. So I'm excited for this thing and for the Neue Klasse platform, it's called. So BMW seems to be getting it right. And, eager to see more of this company. They get the plus for me this week.
Good on you, BMW.
Yeah. Good on you, other Tim. All right. Thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and is brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and send us your questions to podcast@insideevs.com. See you next time.
See you next time. Take care.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.